Hi, this is Jerry Visco. I'm on Radio Free Brooklyn, and it's Visco Disco, the stupid show that airs every Friday at midnight.
Jerry Visco on Radio Free Brooklyn on the show Visco Disco, the Stupid Show, which is, airs every Friday at midnight. And TGIF, and guess what we have here now? We have Screaming Rachel, who is, she is the queen of house music, and she is the head and president of Trax Records. Now, Rachel, can you scream at us?
Oh, it's great to be on.
Scream again, Jerry, Rachel. Disco, scream
Disco,
at us.
Disco.
Scream at us.
Yeah, I'm going to scream at you. Yes.
Oh, yes.
Trax in the house.
Oh, yes. Now, Screaming Rachel is a friend of mine. She's fabulous, and she's been acting in this film. That's how I met her. It's called Vamp Bikers Tress, which is coming out. And she was in Vamp Bikers Dose also. And she's beyond acting. She's a singer. She is the head of the Trax Records, and she was one of the founders of house music, right?
Yes, very true.
And give us a couple sentences. Tell us who the hell you are, Screaming Rachel. Are you also, what a scream? Is that, what's your thing about screaming?
Well, they call me Screaming Rachel because screaming is my attitude. My attitude screams. I walk in the room, you know I'm there. Kind of a little bit like you, Jerry. We make our mark.
And you're a sexy bitch, too.
Yes, exactly.
The guys go crazy over you.
Oh, that's what I like to hear. I like hearing that.
I mean, you are married, but still, you're very gorgeous, and that doesn't hurt.
Well, thank you. Yes, I am married, as you know, and but, you know, I'm glad that the guys still think I'm sexy. That's a good thing.
Of course.
Because we're in show business.
I mean, when you walk in a room, you want somebody to know that you're there, and even if you're married, it's like if you start, like, becoming frumpy and boring, then your husband gets bored, you know?
Yes, I agree.
That's just my feeling. But anyway, Queenly Rachel is not, she's a master of so many different things. So tell us again, like, what is your, what would you say is your main, who you are?
Well.
And also give us a little, you know, most people know about Trax Records, but just tell a little about Trax Records and what it is, you know?
Well, first of all, I will tell you a little bit about Trax Records. Trax Records is the original home of house music. House music is from Chicago. And basically, house music is what today is called EDM. But I think EDM...
EDM?
Yeah. Yeah, that's electronic dance music. That sounds so boring. House is the mother of them all. And
but can you tell me, just curious, why do they call it house music? Was it in the house, or what house was it?
Well, basically, warehouse. It comes from the term warehouse because back in the day when it all started, we used to have warehouse parties and people would say, hey, I'm going down to the house. So it was house was shortened from warehouse, and that's how house music became the international name of this style of music, the four on the floor, you know, pump and beat.
Yeah. And so when house music was created, and what year would you say?
Well, Trax Records itself started in 1985. You know, some people question as far as, you know, house music, when exactly it started. But as far as Trax, and we were originally a vinyl pressing plant, which is interesting, too. And the reason I say that is because we were the first label to really put the DJ's name on the records, and we were pressing vinyl records. So it became a thing in Chicago. All the kids wanted to be like, you know, me, Jesse Saunders, and Vince, who basically made the first house records. Because here we were, you know, these little bandits running around town, kids, and they started playing our stuff on radio, and then everybody wanted to be like us, and kind of this whole, like,
so this was in the, what year again was it? What year?
85.
85. And where were you living then?
Basically what they call Lincoln Park in Chicago.
So you grew up in Chicago.
Yep. I grew up in Chicago. And I love it there. I'm here right now.
Yes. And you've lived in many other places too, but.
Yes, I have. I've lived in Paris. I lived in New York for a great long time. So we definitely know a lot of the same people. But now you had asked me to tell you a little bit about me and what I do.
Yeah.
So
and also who you were when you were a little kid and how, I mean, you're a woman and it's exciting the fact that you were able to get into this business like this.
Well, the thing is, I was always one of those kids, you know, who was always into, like, you know, acting, dancing, singing. And, you know, I had a mom. She was a bit of a show business mom who really kind of encouraged me to be in the business. But I also had that natural love for it. So basically, you know.
Do you have siblings or are you an only child?
I have a couple of half-brothers. So, you know, but I was mostly just raised, you know, as an only child. You could say that, you know.
So that's why you as a girl became so powerful.
I think so, because, you know, when you're raised as an only child, you definitely get a lot of attention, and, you know, you think the world revolves around you, because that's all you know, you know. But, you know, it makes you strong, because you don't have all the other kids around you to play with. So I think you, with me, you know, the imagination of developing my own kind of, you know, little world that I lived in, and then, you know, the things that I did in Chicago, well, you know, one of the first things I did was I was very into punk rock, which is how I met your former guest, Lydia Lunch.
Fabulous.
And, yeah, and so then, you know, it was a couple of guys came to our illegal warehouse punk party and asked me to sing a song called Fantasy, and the rest is history. You know, I didn't even really understand or like the song, but now it's you know, I love it and I totally understand it, and I the lyrics of it kind of really became exactly, you know, what life became. So it's interesting, you know, again.
And Rachel, how old were you, would you say, when you started becoming involved in music? I mean, you were a singer too, but like, when did you start singing, and when did you start doing the business of music, would you say?
14.
For singing?
Yeah, absolutely. I was playing clubs illegally and all kinds of things and having
good for you.
And, you know, but just doing it because I always loved it. That's the thing. And I was just, you know, I was just one of those independent types and still am. And, you know, music always took a kind of a front row seat in my life. And that's the way it's been. Although I do love to write and a little.
And what do you write?
Well, I've actually written a screenplay about my life. It's called The House the Tracks Built. And so I will probably start shopping in that around. I really haven't done that, but, you know.
Okay, if any filmmakers are listening, you'll make a bunch of money with this film, so pay attention.
Yeah, because we've got all the house hits. Stuff like Can You Feel It, Move Your Body, No Way Back. And now, you know, besides having all the classic artists like Farley Jack, Master Funk, and Marshall Jefferson, and Adonis, now we have, you know, some really cool people that are new, like Tyler Stone and maybe even you.
Yeah, Jerry Visco.
That's right.
And then you have, like,
of course,
you've worked with Grandmaster Mel.
Oh, yeah, I've worked with
Africa Bambaataa.
Absolutely.
Let's see. Who else? There are lots of other ones, actually.
Colonel Abrams, just a lot of the people that you hear about. And, you know, Dougie Fresh, many, many people. I was actually the first person who, along with Farley and Bambaataa, created a style called hip house, which is rap over a house beat. So it's kind of interesting because now hip house it's very common. People don't call it that, but now everybody wants to dance. And so where rap was really, really popular, now the whole world is into this dance, and everybody, you know, from everybody that you can think of, from Beyonce and, I don't know, Jay-Z, all of those people.
And what
Rihanna, they're all doing
a lot of people that are DJs.
Do I what about DJs?
I mean,
we basically, DJs are very important to house music, because house music pretty basically started as a DJ form because of the fact that
now this is how it started.
Vinyl,
my dreams all broken hearted, yet I won't give.
Which is a really historical era, or area.
We'll never be the same.
Chicago,
couldn't play those silly games, and yet I won't give.
You know, Mayor Daley.
Girl, they say we were an item. My thoughts I try and hide them, yet I need you. But when we get down to it, I just love the way you do it, and I love you. Love can't turn around.
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 Love can't turn around. Before another, thought I knew you. Don't read it in your letters. Don't you make me feel any better, cause it's not true. Now in my secret visions, forget about decisions, cause I want you. I've got to have you near me. Girl, I wonder, do you hear me? Cause I need you. Love can't turn around. Look and turn around.
Look and turn around.
Look and turn around.
Look and turn around.
Also,
unfortunately, the passing of the famous and fabulous Frankie Knuckles.
Oh, yes. I mean, Frankie, walking into the original warehouse in Chicago where Frankie Knuckles was spinning house music was what really did change my life. I have to say that because he was playing the song that I recorded with Jesse Saunders and Vince Lawrence, Fantasy. And when I saw the way that crowd reacted and what that whole sound was like and how driving and moving it was, that's what really kind of took me, you know, from my punk, although I still feel like I'm a punk at heart, into the house music realm. So Frankie played a big role, both in all of his great music that he did for Trax and just for house music in general. They now have actually started a museum here in Chicago with his record collection, and they're doing a lot of things in his name. And
had you seen him prior to his demise?
Yeah, I mean, you know, not really recently prior to that, but yeah, through the years we kept in touch. And what I did when he passed away is I'm vice president of a nonprofit called Youth Communication, which
what
is
communication?
Started in 19- Youth Communication.
Youth Communication?
Yep, Youth, like in young people, Communication,
yeah.
Which was started in 1977. And basically we started a Frankie Knuckles fund in his name. So when I receive royalties, I actually donate a portion of proceeds from all of the Frankie Knuckles music to these kids, because what they do, what the idea of Youth Communication is to give urban youth a voice. And they do that through the publishing of the newspaper, New Expression. And the archives of New Expression are available at Columbia College. So if you look up Columbia College online, which is not Columbia University. But
no,
I've
heard of Columbia College. They have some really good arts programs there.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's basically really known for its arts and filmmaking.
And writing.
Right. Writing, very, very good with the writing department.
Yeah.
Journalism, absolutely. So what they basically have is our archives are there so that they can be studied if people are interested in seeing, you know, the thoughts of teens through the years. So Frankie Knuckles now has a place, you know, with that history and will continue to.
Yes. And also I'd be interested in finding out in terms of the business itself, because, you know, starting a label is quite an accomplishment. I mean, you did it with the partner, but like, how was it created? It was 83 with Larry Sherman, but how did it actually happen, and why did you decide to do it, or like, what was it, a financial thing, or how did that work?
No, basically, I was one of the kids that came to the record pressing plant, and when Larry saw, because he was a vinyl pressing plant, the success that we had, you know, he pressed up some records for us on credit. And we just took them and within a couple hours sold every record out of the trunk of our car. And he saw, hey, there's something here. I mean, those guys like just drove that stuff around to every little record store in town. And, you know, I mean, you could see there was some magic in it and it just kind of exploded. And Larry was kind of the designated adult at that time, though through the years, I mean, you know, I just kind of, you know, it evolved and I became, you know, the person in charge of it. And basically,
and you think it was because of your singing, but also your interest in music per se?
Yes, because one of the big things that I really always dreamed of was preserving house music forever and bringing it to the world. My mentor was Sylvia Robinson, the woman who created Sugar Hill Records, and she actually did the rap hip-hop before Russell Simmons. So she was my inspiration. I was an intern for her.
Is she still around?
And actually, she passed a few years back, but she was, you know, her passing was in Time magazine. She was very well-known, Sugar Hill Gang and Grandmaster Kelly Mellon, the Furious Five. All of those people really started at Sugar Hill. And had she not sold the label, I think the whole history of hip-hop would be different today. But she sold the label, and before she did, you know, my idea was, you know, I'm going to see house music all the way through. You know, I didn't know I'd end up, you know, doing what I did, you know, coming back to Trax and becoming president and all that until, you know, after my time at Sugar Hill. That's what became the inspiration to not only, you know, sing music and write music and produce it, but actually take the label to another level.
And when do they start calling you Screamin' Rachel?
Oh, gosh. Geez, that's been going on like
forever. Did you invent that, or did somebody else invent it?
Actually, it sort of was a thing because, you know, house music, a lot of people in house music have these crazy names like Farley Jack Master Funk and Steve Silk Hurley and Screamin' Rachel. It's kind of, yeah, you know, I don't even know exactly where it came from, but all I can say is it stuck, and I think a lot of it might be because of, you know, when I was doing my punk music, because even though, you know, like I said, you know, I'm into the house thing, I think it might have confused people, but, you know, that whole punk attitude was part of Screamin' Rachel, and
yeah,
it still is today.
And also, would you say that in the terms of the music industry over the years, it's probably changed quite a bit, right?
Oh, incredibly. I mean, everything is so different now. I saw the future of digital distribution. I was one of the first people to get into that because a guy named Tom Ryan, who literally created what was to become eMusic, licensed my catalog. And the thing was, I was like, oh, can I still press vinyl? Yes. Can I still do CDs? Yes. Can I still license? Yes. And he said, I only want an exclusive for the internet. And at that time, there was no such thing. There was no such thing. And that was prior to iTunes. And, you know, as we see now, all music, not all of it, but a great deal of it really is digital. CDs are becoming a dead technology.
I still buy CDs. You know why? I'm a hoarder.
Well,
and I'd rather,
you know,
have a CD. I don't like buying things from iTunes, you know what I mean?
I kind of understand because they can get lost in cyberspace. And actually,
yeah,
I'm happy that there are still some people to buy CDs because, honestly, for artists and even for record companies, the whole digital realm has not been, you know, it's hurt a little bit as far as the amount of money that's made. And now what's really happening that's even bringing it further to taking it away is that most people are streaming. They're not even downloading. They're simply streaming.
I hate that.
And as you know.
I mean, of
yeah,
course, they're streaming this radio show, which is fine, which we are going to put it up on Mixcloud and Audio Boom. But still, in terms of music, I want to have it so I can listen to it when I want to hear it.
Well, I think that's great, and I hope more people who are listening to you, Jerry Visco, and your radio show will take that into consideration. And another thing that I can tell you about CDs, which I bet a lot of people don't know, is that CDs sound much better than the MP3s that they sell you on iTunes.
You think so?
I know it. It's a different sound wave.
Yes,
it's
I guess so. But how do you feel about CDs versus vinyl? I remember that being an issue back in the old
vinyl
days.
Sounds the best. Vinyl sounds the best.
Except let me put you this way. Being the fact that I'm kind of ADHD, I often would scratch my vinyl.
Vinyl,
I mean, you can do
vinyl.
That. You can mess up your CDs too, but I would say, you know, I love vinyl. I still have a bunch of them, but sometimes you can destroy them.
Well, you know, CDs disintegrate and things happen to those also. But
yeah,
vinyl, as far as, like, let's say what they found out is that even tapes, let's say back in the day when they had the 2-inch audio tapes, even those really disintegrate. So the best way
I used to get those tapes too. I still have a shitload of them in my house. Cassette tapes.
Well, the best thing is really vinyl. I mean, vinyl is the best
sound
way to
quality
preserve music, period.
Yeah.
Yeah, sound quality and the best way to preserve music, period. And, you know, I'm so happy, you know, that the world is kind of, I mean, it did take note of tracks for a long time, but now, you know, we're into a whole nother generation of people taking notice of tracks. And so we're having.
What do you think about gramophones and 78 vinyls?
You know, I tell you, it preserved it. The 78s preserved a lot of music, which today, you know, they're digitizing it, of course. But thank God that they even had those records, because.
Do you think that anybody under the age of 21 even knows what a gramophone is?
Probably not, although some trendy people might, because one of the best vinyl stores in the whole world is called Gramophone Records. And they're out of Chicago, but they're also online, and it's a big deal. So, but as I started to say, we're into a whole new generation of people loving house, and you know, I'm real happy because I'll be in Paris on the 29th. So at
wow, 29th of July. And what are you doing there, darling?
Yeah, actually, I'm DJing and singing live and hosting our tracks night, which will also feature
vous êtes DJ.
Oui, yes. Indeed.
Which place? DJ. What's the name of the place?
It's called Wanderlust, but the room that we are taking over, or the music facility there, is called Nuit Fauve.
So Nuit what? N-U-I-T,
Nuit Fauve. So really spelled N-U-I-T-S F-A-U-V-E-S.
Oh, Nuit. Nuit Fauve. Nuit. Yeah.
Nuit. Oui.
Je parle le français. Je parle le français. Vous parlez le français?
Un petit peu,
yeah.
But I try, and the French always like you if you try.
Well, you know, I was born on Bastille Day.
Oh, that is so cool.
But, of course, it's very sad what happened there on Bastille Day, of course. But hopefully when you get there, things will be okay.
Now, that's true. But, I mean, one thing about Bastille Day is it's certainly something that, you know, people will not forget. And then when I'm in Paris on Bastille Day, because I used to have an office there, and I loved all the fireworks and the celebrations and things like that that people do. So it's pretty neat.
Yes. And in terms of the music scene in Paris, what is it going on like these days, would you say?
Well, Paris, I mean, the music scene has always been very into dance music and house music. They even have a magazine called Tracks, which is actually still in print because, you know, so many magazines have gone digital. But Tracks magazine is still printed in France. They are our namesake, and they've done many pieces and supported us very much throughout the years. And I also should mention that Marshall Jefferson will be on the tour, Joey Beltram will be there, Robert Owens will be there, and I'll be there. And those are a lot of favorites around the world for people into house.
And you travel. I mean, I'd say Europe does have a very great interest in, like, certain mashups, house music and electronic music and stuff. I mean, I love, like, in Berlin, there's a lot of great DJs there and stuff.
There are. I mean, it's a whole, really, now there is a whole DJ culture around the world, and especially in Europe. But a lot of these DJs that are what they call today superstar DJs, kind of going back to DJ Keoki. It's funny because Michael Alec, of course, called DJ Keoki superstar DJ Keoki. But, you know, now at this time, superstar DJs are making up to $45 million a year, which is incredible to think about. But true.
I know. And then the DJs in New York at the clubs are not making that kind of money.
No. I mean, I think that the people that are really paying the most are festivals, but really people in Europe are the ones that are actually, you know, really supportive of this in a big way. Because
by
I
the
think
way,
like
it's, just to mention, I am actually DJing myself in House of Yes tonight. This is Friday. Let's see, what's the date on Friday? The 20th. Let me see. I don't even know the calendar. I'm crazy. But I am DJing Friday at House of Yes in Bushwick. And so those of you who are listening, I won't be going on probably till 1 a.m. So I want you all, after you listen to the show or listen to the show on your phone, jump into a cab and come on over to House of Yes.
And you
so
know
that's
what?
Friday, July 22nd.
July 22nd.
Yeah. Anyway, but how long have you been DJing over the years?
Well, I started DJing probably about 5 years ago because I should have probably started a lot sooner because in house music, that is a very important part of it. But I think that what people forget is that, you know, to be a good DJ isn't necessarily only about scratching and mixing. To be a DJ that people can really appreciate is about playing great music.
I agree with that because I feel like it's a bit of that kind of, that other stuff is a bit like kind of gimmicky, you know?
Right, and the whole thing
is, I mean, there's nothing wrong
that,
with it, but that's not all it is, you know?
No, it isn't. And that's the whole thing, is that people a lot of times don't even really recognize that much. If a DJ tries to play all this fancy stuff but he's boring, then, you know, that just defeats the whole purpose of what it is. I mean,
yeah.
So I think it's about A&R and picking, you know, great music. I think that that's really what people want to hear, and that's what I try to do. So technically, I'm a good DJ, but, you know, I think it's really more about what I pick to play.
And also women DJs are, I wonder when they weren't available as much back in the old days, but when do you think
still,
a lot of more women DJs got their place?
There still aren't a lot, but there are more, many more, just as there really, except for Sylvia Robinson and myself, and I don't know, there are probably a couple other, like, record company presidents, but, you know, there's not a lot.
But
same
there's some.
The
but there were none, I think there were none back in the old days, right?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really think. Well, Sylvia Robinson, I mean, she's the early one that I can think of. I don't know if there was anyone that was, you know, before her as the president of a label. I can't think of one. There could have been historically. That would be interesting. But, yeah, you know, to this day, that's something that you don't find that a lot. It is interesting because, you know, now we're distributed by Orchard Sony, and the ladies are in charge there. So I like that.
Oh, so you're working with Sony. That's very cool.
Yeah, it's cool. But you know what? The thing is, they're our distributor, but they don't interfere with our independence or even tell us what to do in any way. They just distribute the music, which is great, because major labels scare me in the sense that, you know, they are just a distributor for us. But if I was signed to Sony and these people were interfering in my career, as happens a lot with so many artists, that I really would not enjoy. So we have our independence, and yet we have great distribution, and we have ladies in charge, which I really love. Colleen and Kat, they're great. You know, and Jean Goosen over there.
Well, you know, back in the old days, even women going out to a club by themselves was, like, dangerous, but not anymore, you know, so much.
No, I love to go out by myself. That's something that I love to do, and I do it often. I love to travel by myself. You know, you meet people, and it's fun.
But, you know, maybe back in the old days when I first went to New York, I did go out to clubs and stuff, but I would say it was less common for women to go by themselves, you know.
I think it's a little different, thank God. Yeah, I think things are changing. Yep, thank God that they are changing. But, you know, that's the whole thing. I think you've always been, you know, an individual and just kind of run your life as you see fit, as I've done. And so nothing, you know, has gotten in the way of that. I'm not letting, you know, any of this kind of chauvinism or things like that get in the way of who I am. And I guess part of that is, you know, my mom was fiercely independent. My grandma was fiercely independent.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
That's
and when you were a child, like when you grew up as a teenager, what kind of music were you listening to and what got you, you know, becoming also a singer but also interested in music? What was your interest back in the old days?
Punk. And actually blues, which is a kind of a strange thing to say, but I love blues. You know, I definitely love people like Etta James and, you know, Billie Holiday. And then, of course, you know, punk. Even Lydia Lunch was kind of an influence on me, which is interesting because, you know, I just thought she was the coolest, you know.
Absolutely.
I remember back then, and I loved Xene from X, you know, back then. So, yeah. Punk and blues, which they don't seem like they go together, but in my world they do. And, you know, and I guess in house music, really, it was funny because I was, at the time that it all started, you know, I was in a minority because of not being African-American. And I remember, you know, some guy in England from some record company saying to me, "You can't be house because you're white." And, of course, that was nonsense because I helped create house.
Who said
but,
that?
You know, now...
Who
now
said
that's
that?
All changed. A record company executive in London.
What's his name?
Because at the time...
I want to give him
well,
a little
you know
phone
what?
Call. Is he white or is
no.
he...
No, he is actually Indian, you know, kind of... but
yeah.
He
well,
grew up in England.
Did he now... Did he take it back once he became success?
Yeah, he did. I mean,
now
you know,
he's kissing her feet, right? Has he kissed her feet?
Yeah, you know, he definitely learned that he was wrong about that. And that was a ridiculous thing to say, because music never has a color, as far as I'm concerned. Music, you know, does
well,
not.
Well, sometimes artists and cultures can grow, but in terms of people that are fans, it could be from lots of different things, you know?
Yeah, I think that that's really true. And what was it? I really read an interesting story that I don't know if it'll ever be made, but about Mahalia Jackson and how she, a lot of people do not know this, because, I mean, Mahalia Jackson was somebody my grandma loved. But anyway, Mahalia Jackson was great friends with Dinah Shore. And I read a whole, like, screenplay treatment about their relationship. And back then, you know, just that was just so unusual. But still, you know, it just was. I mean, they were women way ahead of their time. But even then, it existed that people were, you know, some people were blurring the lines. And it's a good thing.
Would you say growing up in Chicago gave you access to soul, hip hop, and all that, and rap, and all that other stuff?
Yeah, well, that's another thing. I should say that another thing that really changed my life besides punk and blues was the first time I ever heard the song The Message. That just,
The
I
Message?
Don't know, I was like, what? Yep, by Grandmaster Flash.
Just
so
like say the words,
me,
huh?
Because I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. Remember that one? Great song. And I'm great, you know. So that, you know, hearing that and Afrika Bambaataa, you know, Planet Rock, those things really, I mean, those that affected me too. So I'd say punk, the original hip hop, you know, I'll never forget when I first went on tour with Dougie Fresh and he took the mic during soundcheck and he was just flat out amazing, you know.
And you know, you knew a lot of really famous people over the years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I opened up for Tony Bennett, you know, when I used to do Tattoo, which was a kind of a classy Upper East Side, you know, nightclub thing.
Tattoo?
But I was Tattoo. Do you remember it?
I know the name, but I don't think I went there, though.
Yeah.
What street is it on? What street was it on?
I think it was 53rd around Lex. It was pretty near the United Nations because I used to do parties there. And I would have people, everybody from Prince Albert, just Liza Minnelli, Ashford and Simpson.
So you know all the interesting people.
I got to know them. And a lot of it was, I was kind of an uptown, downtown girl because I also used to do parties with Michael Allen. But it was like two separate worlds, you know. It was so different because there were the club kids that I'd do the parties downtown and then uptown where I'd, you know, sing with actually what was it, Max Weinberg's band that used to be on Conan. And so every Monday, you know, we do new material, and I sing with that band live, and it was more like blues and jazz, which I still do for fun because I enjoy singing that, and I do that for
and
fun.
Did, and when you, when, what years were you in New York? You were in New York when it was kind of funky, right?
Yeah, I got there probably like late, maybe 89, right around there, and basically stayed till, like, what was it, 2006, you know, so 88,
and would you say
right
being
there.
Here in New York then gave you access to a lot of interesting,
music New York,
and art and stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, New York is the epicenter, you know. I mean, I love New York. I absolutely adore New York, and I adore the people there, and I think that culturally – I would not be who I am today without, you know, spending time in New York and without coming to New York on a regular basis, because New York, it's just, I mean, it is a melting pot, and it is a place where I think so many great things come out of New York. There's no doubt. And it's funny because sometimes people fight about house music because they say, well, house music was from New York, but then there's a little truth to that, even though the rest of the world pretty much all does say it's from Chicago. And reasons that I say there's a little truth is because Frankie Knuckles came from New York to Chicago, which is interesting.
And also, what about acid music?
Oh, God, acid music was started at Trax with Future. You were asking me a little bit about Future, which is spelled with a P-H-U-T-U-R-E.
Yes.
So, yeah, Future was the name of an acid group, and they basically, there's a song which is called Acid Trax, and it's kind of like the Fantasia of the acid generation. It's really a cool, like, 11-minute opus kind of thing, but it's brilliant, and it all, Acid House started because of a simple bass machine called a Roland 303, and it was using it in a different way by tweaking up the knobs that they came across the acid sound, and the rest is history. They actually did an exhibition about acid in the Science Museum in the UK, and they actually featured some of our groups and music and talked about Acid House and had a Roland 303 on display. It was interesting because, yeah, that's kind of how it started.
And why do you think they called it acid? Did it have something to do with psychedelics, would you say?
It was basically, well, I mean, you know, there's different stories about it. One of the stories is that Larry Sherman said, oh, this sounds like the kind of stuff that I used to listen to when I was high on acid, you know? So, I don't know. So that may have something to do with it. It was that whole, like, really weird, twerky sound, you know? And now, of course, Acid House is making a huge, I don't know if I'd say comeback, because it's never really gone away, but there's a lot of interest in it. And, in fact, we work with a producer out of Italy called Carmelo Carone, and Carmelo just produced a new acid cut for me. So that was pretty cool.
And what artists are on tracks right now that you would recommend people check? I mean, we're going to play some of the songs, of course, but are there any artists in particular that you think you would like to mention?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that, you know, there's a lot of great new people. There certainly is Tyler Stone, which is interesting because Michael Musto, one of your other guests, was the person who introduced me to Tyler and said, you need to sign Tyler Stone. So I'm really happy about, you know, having him.
And
on
Tyler
board.
Was my roommate for a year. And, of course, I'm the one that actually helps him buy equipment.
See,
but he's always been talented, always.
Yeah, so see, there's that whole, like, family thing in there. It's kind of funny. And then, you know, Tyler has a new album, which has just been released, Tales from the East Side. And, as you know, he had his record release party in New York, just I think it was
last
week.
Yes, and I do want to have him as my guest at one of these days.
Yeah, because he is really, really talented. Then we have Inner Rebels, another great group. We have another.
How do you spell it? What is it?
Inner Rebels.
Inner Rebels?
And, yep, Inner Rebels and Less Hate. That's another great mixer. Of course, like I said, Carmelo, George Cruz, who does a lot of, you know, great, like, kind of really underground style minimal house, which is another really cool thing that's going on these days. So, and then, you know, Farley Jack Master Funk is coming back, which is interesting because Farley was one of the originators. He had a huge song called Love Can't Turn Around, which many people would remember in the clubs. And now he's coming back. So it's kind of like all this great new stuff. And then, you know, people like Joe Smooth, he's certainly a classic, but just amazing. Don Rimini. Is another person, you know, to look out for, Nick Sarno. But we've had, you know, and continue to have really great people. And we try to, we don't really care what's in or what's hip or look for, you know, we just, it's a very simple thing. You know, we either like it or we don't. We don't really care. You know, we put it out there if we like it and if we believe in it. And that's.
And what about your involvement with acting and film?
God, I absolutely have always loved acting, you know, forever. And that's why I guess also Lydia Lunch was an influence, because back when I was a punk, she was doing her, you know, underground films. And so I saw all that cool stuff and, you know, kind of looked up to her in a way. And acting has always been something that I love. And I'm so happy about Vamp Bikers. I'm hoping that, you know, Sony Orchard will distribute it because they're the largest independent film distributors out there. So it's kind of cool that now, you know, they're on board with us. And I think that you're a genius in it. You really are. And I'm not just saying that because I'm on your show, but you are amazing on film. And your documentary, you know, which I've seen a little bit, I know it's not quite finished, or maybe it is, but it's amazing. You're amazing.
Yes, it will be. And it's true. I am fabulous. That's why I'm on this show, I guess.
Exactly. And the thing is, too, I'm also, besides my acting, I'm really interested in soundtracks. And I know Tyler's working on your soundtrack with Trax Records, which is cool. And we're going to lend some music to you guys to use for your fabulous documentary. And then Vamp Bikers, we're absolutely doing the soundtrack for that. So Eric's got to get all that done. You know, I think that that's it. I think the thing about Eric, our director, is Eric likes to create, but he likes to keep creating. And sometimes I hope he likes to finish, because this, you know, this Vamp Bikers trilogy, I think it's very special, you know, having real bikers, having Michael Allen, just what a cast, you know, then having Apache Ramos from the Warriors, who, by the way, Apache is the guy who discovered me and brought me to New York in the first place.
Wow.
It's kind of crazy how all that happened. And that's how I met Eric and got to be in Vamp Bikers.
And tell us about your screenplay, because that does sound interesting.
Well, the screenplay, it's called The House the Tracks Built, and it's really my story, you know, and it's kind of, it takes you to really reclaiming the streets, which is, you know, kind of what I believe we have done, but it takes you through it. It takes you through me being a punk rocker at the Space Place, you know, all the way to, you know, house music being a whole big international thing. You know, like I was just in Cannes, you know, at the International Music Festival performing. And who would have thought, you know, from this, when you read, just like in the Vice story, like you read about how, you know, at one time, you know, Trax Records was all broken down and people lost all their spirit. But I kind of came back, and I always believed that, you know, I would take it back to, you know, what it needed to be, and actually not only take it back, but bring it to where it needed to be, because it hadn't really gotten there. Who would have thought from a dirty old warehouse sweeping floors to being in Cannes, you know, it's quite a story.
Yes. Now, Rachel Screaming, can you scream another time for us? Scream.
Ow! Screaming Rachel with Jerry Visco Disco.
And you have a record. You have records coming out, right?
I certainly do. That's another thing, is I've, one of the records that I sent you is something that I did with New York legend, Todd Terry. Now, Todd Terry.
Oh, yeah. How do you spell that?
T-O-D-D-T-E-R-R-Y.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Todd, yeah, they call him Todd the God. You know, David Morales, who's another big, big, like, New York DJ. He's loved throughout the world. You know, he's what I would consider one of the best DJs around. So we did Good Spirits Rising, and so I did send you that. And there's just a lot of cool stuff that I sent you. And the big project that I'm doing is called You Do. And the idea of You Do, which is now available, and you can buy it, Beatport, iTunes, TrackSource, anywhere where they, you know, sell music, and you can stream it and everything else. The idea of You Do is that basically you can, if you go to our Bandcamp, get the stems, which means you can, besides like all the great stuff that we've created. In fact, Emsky is on one of the You Do tracks.
Oh, yes, Billy J. Emsky. Yes.
Yeah. Who's also, he's a hip hop legend. He is so talented.
Yeah.
So.
And I introduced you kids.
I know. You've been amazing.
I knew you would be perfect together.
Yeah, so it's been great. So he's featured on it, Todd Terry, Nick Sarno, Joe Smooth. So you can get the tracks. They're really cool, and it's called You Do. And it's Gina Triple X, Good Spirits Rising. It's got My Main Man, which was originally something that Mojo Magazine in England did a pretty good piece about it, and how it actually influenced what they called Madonna's New York. So that was interesting.
Well, anyway, Rachel, I'm going to say goodbye for now, but I might speak to you again later. But it's great talking to you. You are so fabulous. And
thank
I cannot
you.
Wait to see you soon. But this is Radio Free Brooklyn, Jerry Visco. And you are the best and love you.
And I love you too. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Peace.
TGIF, honey buns. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Let it flow.